Hello everyone, welcome back to episode 34 of Fearless Flyer. My name's James, and with me as always is Grant.
Hi James, I hope you're well, and this is going to be an interesting episode because although we spoke previously calling it an episode on flight time limitations, it's more about like jet lag and fatigue and all that as well. So,
yeah. So in the last episode, we had a chat with Matt about flight data monitoring, and we discussed how this could be used effectively to enhance the safety of aircraft operations. In this episode, we're going to be talking about jet lag, or another term you might be thinking of is fatigue. We're also going to touch on flight time limitations.
So most of you would have likely, albeit reluctantly, have traveled on a long-haul flight. I'm sure you would have gotten off an aircraft and you may have been feeling a little bit tired to maybe feeling completely exhausted. Or maybe you got off and you're feeling fine and later on that day you were tired. Or hey, maybe you even woke up really early in the morning and wondered why you were so wide awake. What you are suffering from are the symptoms of a thing called jet lag.
Jet lag is associated with crossing time zones. That is to say, traveling east or west on a map that would be left to right or right to left if the map is facing north. A more complicated way of referring to this is transmeridian travel. So that is moving in an east or west direction away from the time zone in which you live. But you can also get jet lag from traveling north or south on, say, a night flight within a time zone, where in essence you miss out on a good night's sleep in a comfortable bed, or really of any bed, that fact. An example of this is a night flight from London to Cape Town. No matter where you are on the aircraft, there isn't much chance of a good night's sleep in your own bed. Hence, you're going to miss out on a good night's sleep, and thus you're going to be feeling pretty tired during some period after the flight.
Yeah, the Wikipedia definition for jet lag starts off with jet lag being a physiological condition that results from alterations to the body's circadian rhythms caused by rapid long-distance transmeridian travel.
So let's break that down. A physiological condition is a breakdown of functions and mechanisms in a living system, i.e. the body is doing weird stuff because it is confused. The body's circadian rhythm is simply the natural 24-hour cycle that our body is set to. So in essence, the body likes to follow the same routine every day. You get out of bed, eat breakfast, go to work, have lunch, do more work, dinner, watch TV, go to sleep, and just restart the day, the same process the next day. Now, if you move quickly into another time zone and disrupt that pattern, the body really doesn't like that.
No, that's right. And the term jet lag is used because before the arrival of the jet passenger aircraft, it was very uncommon to travel far and fast enough in, say, any 24-hour time period to cause the body to get confused. In essence, the body adopted easily enough with the slower change in the time zones that were associated with the slower transport available at the time, like trains or passenger ships. But high-speed jet aircraft meant that we could traverse many time zones quickly, meaning the body clock got confused and hence the name jet lag.
So there is, in fact, a rough calculation for how long it takes to get over jet lag, and it goes a little like this. For every hour time zone change, it takes one day to recover. Now, on a small time zone change for a day flight, you're not going to really notice any difference. But once the time zone change gets over 4 hours, this calculation seems to work better.
Yes, and I remember flying from New Zealand to the UK as a passenger many years ago. It was my first really long flight, and it was a 24-hour flight with a 2-hour stopover in Singapore. And the difference in time between New Zealand and the United Kingdom is 12 hours. And the first 6 days that I arrived in the UK, I was really completely wasted. And it wasn't until about day 12 that I was able to sleep through the night and I started to feel I was operating back at 100%. I did, however, find a way of reducing this jet lag when I returned to New Zealand, and it went something like this. So on offer was a number of flights with connections in Singapore to New Zealand. Now, if I flew direct, I reckon I would have been severely jet lagged. However, I planned the flights around what I thought was best for my body clock. So I caught the 11 o'clock in the morning departure from London. It was a 12-hour flight time, and I arrived in at Singapore at 7:30 in the morning Singapore time. So my body clock was ready for bed when I arrived in Singapore. The logical connection would have been 2 hours later and then got on a flight to New Zealand. But instead, I went to the airport hotel and had a room booked there for 12 hours. And for 8 of those hours, I slept like a baby. I slept really well. And then I caught the 10:30 p.m. flight that night from Singapore, New Zealand, and I arrived at 1:30 in the afternoon. It was around about a 10-hour flight. So I was still feeling quite good on arrival into New Zealand, but by around 8 p.m., I was ready for bed. Now, it took a few days to get into New Zealand time, but I reckon had I flown direct, it would have taken me many more days to get over the jet lag. So what I'm getting at here is look at the flights that you look at your departure time, think about the connections and the arrival time, and whether it would also be worth a stopover. In essence, unless you can sleep sufficiently sitting up in a seat, you are going to get some form of jet lag. So that's jet lag. Now, as air crew, both pilots and cabin crew, we get jet lag as well, but we don't stay in a place long enough to acclimatize to that local time zone. Hence, we don't use the term jet lag. Instead, we use the term fatigue.
But before we start talking about aeroplanes, it is worth talking about heavy goods vehicles as we see these on the roads every day.
Yeah, that's probably a good point because it gives people a little bit more of an idea that it's just not that crew that have limitations, flight crew have limitations. And a lot of people are unaware that there is strict duty times associated for heavy goods vehicles, and for a good reason as well.
Yeah, a tired truck driver would cause absolute carnage on the road. And for example, if only one dozed off for like a second, the next minute they crossed into the center of the road and onto oncoming traffic with the high probability of really bad consequences for any oncoming traffic. So truck drivers have a scheme which limits their driving hours, ensures adequate breaks and rest. The schemes differ depending on country, but I'd imagine the schemes have been devised from historical data about heavy goods vehicles, accidents, known sleep patterns derived from scientific studies, and all governed by a regulatory authority, with the aim to keep all road users safe.
Yeah, that's correct. And now a similar concept also applies to pilots and cabin crew. You'll be pleased to know this. And we refer to this as the Flight and Duty Time Limitation Scheme, or FTL for short. The purpose of the scheme is to provide a set of rules to ensure that aircrew fatigue does not decrease the safety of a flight. Now, most aviation accidents and incidents are a result of human factors, and fatigue is taken into account as a major factor which contributes to human error. Therefore, the fatigue of flight crew members has been an issue in civil aviation since the 1944 Chicago Convention.
Anyway, these rules can get pretty confusing. So Grant, keep it fairly simple. Can you just go over the basics of a typical flight time limitation scheme?
Yeah, for pilots and cabin crew, work starts well before the aircraft pushes back at the gate, and generally it's about an hour for short-haul operation and an hour and a half for long-haul operations. So the duty period starts when we report for work. We also call this the beginning of the flight duty period. Now, the limit on how long we can fly once we start this duty depends on two main factors, the first one being what time of the day the duty starts, and the second being how many sectors we do. So a sector is a takeoff and a landing. Within this concept is reference to whether we are acclimatized to the time zone or not. That is our body still in another time zone, or has it been in the same time zone for a sufficient amount of time to be acclimatized? In other words, you sleep okay in your bed at night and you're not tired during the day.
So as you can imagine, there's a table where you can look all these limitations up, but could you just give us a few examples?
Yeah, if we report at 7 o'clock in the morning and we fly one sector, we can have a duty period of 13 hours. And at the same time, if we reported and we did two sectors, that would be reduced by 45 minutes to 12 and a quarter hours. And this applies in a table to any time we start locally between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. As the day goes on, there are different time brackets until we get to reporting for a flight between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning. That's the most restrictive. And for a single sector, that is now only allowed a duty period of 11 hours as opposed to 13 hours if you started in the morning. And for two sectors, it's only 10 hours, 15 minutes. So from these examples, you can probably understand there is a table we use to work out our duty period, and the company rostering system takes this into account when building our work rosters. There are also other tables that relate to whether you are acclimatized to the time zone you're in. Also, if we're carrying additional pilots, what we call an augment crew, and whether that be an extra pilot or two extra pilots, then the duty time can be extended, and it can be very long. With a heavy crew of four pilots, we can go up to 22 hours. And this, as the table then takes into account the fact that the crew can take in-flight rest, so you can extend the duty period. Also, bear in mind that, say, on a two-sector day with a flight time of 3 hours each way, so you go from A to B, then back to A again, that means you'll likely be on duty for an hour before takeoff. There'll be an hour on the turnaround. So your day now becomes like 8 hours.
Yeah, and so what happens if there's a technical issue or a weather delay? Basically, it's going to mean that you're going to exceed these duty hours.
Yeah, we have an option to extend the duty period by up to 3 hours, and we call this discretion. Before we go into discretion, we'll take into account various factors like how long the delay is, what impact it has on the operation of the aircraft, how the crew's feeling with regard to their fatigue levels. Now, also, in between flights and duties, there must be a set amount of time off per month and year, and there's a minimum limit on the amount of days off, and also a minimum number of days off that need to be paired together. And on top of that, there are limits to how many hours you can fly in a week, a month, and a year as well.
So as you can imagine from this quick brief discussion, there are quite a few tables which relate to different scenarios that have to be adhered to, all with the aim of ensuring that your pilots and cabin crew are adequately rested for the period in which they've been rostered to operate your flight. You'll be pleased to know that the many tables we've referred to here also have been used in a similar way to heavy goods vehicle drivers, as well to avoid these drivers from causing road carnage due to fatigue. So why do we need an FTL scheme or similar road transport limitation scheme?
Well, you've just alluded to it there. The avoidance of fatigue is the fundamental issue here, as you've just mentioned. But to put fatigue in context, let's take alcohol as an example, and I'm going to use some data from 2004 here. Now, alcohol slows the reactions and it can make one do stupid things, as pretty much fatigue can as well. And in the UK, the fly alcohol limit is set to something like 20 milligrams per mil of blood. That was in 2004. And the drink driving limit was 80 milligrams per milliliter of blood. Now, the UK fatigue boundary was equivalent not to 20, but 80 milligrams per mil of blood. So in essence, a pilot flying around tired could have a level of attention that is over the UK drink driving limit. In essence, drunk flying through fatigue.
Now, of course, it is quite hard to quantify fatigue because it is subjective, but it's easy to blow into a bag or have a blood test and quantify how much alcohol is swirling around in your system.
Yes, that's right. And this is where the flight time limitation system is the savior. In the modern corporate world of anything, the boss wants more work out of you for the money they are paying you. And if you don't live in a world where a business is regulated by authorities and thus best practices are applied to ensure your employees' well-being, then you will likely have fatigued workers. But in aviation, it goes a step further. For with even out a decent regulatory oversight and hence a sufficient flight time limitation scheme, your aircraft would start having accidents or incidents.
And that's going to just affect the reputation of your operation.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, it's easy to blame the crew of a crash whereby they've followed all the rules regarding a fatigue scheme. However, some airlines are disingenuous with the interpretation of the many rules and therefore find ways of fudging the scheme. But they do this at the behest of the airline's reputation and integrity should something go wrong.
And is it just airlines that are trying to like fudge the FTL scheme?
No. In 2004, the UK British Airlines Pilots Association, their acronym being BALPA, they ended up with a fight with its government over new rules being implemented by the European Union. And in June 2004, the very day after the European parliamentary elections in the UK, the Council of Ministers were being asked to set new European-wide rules that had less to do with science and more to do with political compromise, i.e. they were not following the scientifically proven and tested historical data, but pandering to politicians who were undoubtedly under the influence of lobbying from big business. And Belper wrote to the UK minister to say that if the UK adopted the draft as per the European Union, airline operations where flight crew in exercising their license provisions might become less safe.
Yeah, and they went further than this and said, quote, "A considerable amount of data has been collected over the past 20 years on the sleep and alertness of the aircrew, and the delivery, distribution, and safety boundaries are widely understood. The much-respected European Committee for Aircrew Scheduling and Safety," which it's got a long acronym, "in a recent report concluded the following. Based on our current understanding of physiological and psychological factors contributing to fatigue in aviation operations, it is our view that there would be a significant increase in the risk of fatigue-related incidents and accidents if operators were permitted to operate to the limits specified in the EP proposal."
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. Limits, a lot of operations now, they see limits as a target rather than an actual limit, and they're constantly aiming for the limit. Going on a little bit further there, the main article in newspapers read something like, "Pilot leaders have reacted with huge disappointment, dismay, and disbelief to today's decision of the European Council of Ministers to adopt flying time rules that are unsafe, unscientific, and a political fudge."
And what this meant is some airlines changed their locations to other countries where the scheme was more in favour of the accountant rather than the concern of the operating staff being tired at work. So just something to think about when considering who you fly with.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there have been many accidents where fatigue was a contributing factor in the accident, but being hard to quantify and being easy for the said company to simply say the pilot was rostered within the approved lifetime limitation scheme, fatigue is then removed from the post-accident report as a contributing factor to the accident. Anyway, let's finish up with talking about some other interesting facts. There are limits on how old you can be to fly in a commercial operation, and these differ from country to country. Most pilots, when they retire, they will probably have between 15,000 to 25,000 hours flying time under their belt. Do you know who has the most flying time in history, James?
Well, a quick Google search of this says it was someone called John Edward Long Jr., who was born in 1915 and passed away in 1999. And the Guinness Book of Records had him flying for 65,000 hours. And just to put that in some perspective, if he took off today, he wouldn't land back on the planet for 7 years and 4 months. To accumulate these hours, his job was flying along power lines, checking them, and most of his flying, therefore, was done under 200 feet.
John Long Jr., he was inducted into the Alabama Aviation Hall of Fame, and rightfully so.
There you go. Anyway, in the next episode, we're going to be discussing the engineering maintenance side of operating commercial aircraft and just aircraft in general.
Yeah, we will be very fortunate enough to have Glenn with us for an interview. Glenn and I joined the Royal New Zealand Air Force together as aircraft engineers, and Glenn continued on with engineering in the civil world because he was very good at it and I was useless. So it will be great to have Glenn with us to talk about the maintenance of today's commercial aircraft.
Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that episode and learned something about how hopefully your crew aren't fatigued, but definitely check your carriers, like check the reputation of the carrier you're going to be flying on beforehand.
There's also a little bit of information there, and bear in mind fatigue's also related to jet lag, so have a think about jet lag and how a flight might affect your body with the arrival times. It might be worth choosing a different airline or a different flight times to suit your body clock. Think about how your body clock works, and that can make a difference as well.
Yeah, and that was quite interesting about the level of blood alcohol limits comparison to flying and what fatigue does.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, from me, I look forward to hearing from you guys. Keep in touch on social media and have a good day.
Yes, and from me, it's goodbye. If you get a chance and you're enjoying the podcast, drop us a line or write us a review. It'd be much appreciated. So from me, wherever you are in the world, thank you very much to your ears for listening, and goodbye.